From PPRO, this is Payments Radio, the show for and about the payments industry, covering news, interviewing experts, and talking about all the ways the world pays. This week we bring you the impacts of COVID-19 on commerce, thoughts on the Wirecard scandal, and on a more positive note, fintech investment announcements and a quick payments news roundup. My name's Matt Jackson, and with me we have James Booth. James, hi, welcome back to what was formerly the PPRO podcast and is now Payments Radio. It's been some time since we spoke on this forum. We work together very closely, so we speak every day. But for the sake of the podcast, let's welcome each other back and ask each other how we are. How are you?
I'm really good, and you, Matt? Great to be back online. Great to be recording another podcast again. It's been a long time since we did one of these. I think the last podcast we had was back in November. So we've taken a bit of a break, had a bit of time off, and I think we've got a fresh new start, and we're ready to put a lot of energy into this, certainly from my side. So very happy to be back online and chatting about all things payments and fintech with you.
Yeah, for sure. I would like to say not much has changed since the last one, but not only from a PPRO perspective, from a payments perspective, but from a global socioeconomic, in almost any way you can expect, something has changed. So we won't attempt to cover all of that, but I think it's probably worth us recognizing the impact COVID has had on our lives personally and on payments as an industry, and maybe spend some time speaking about that. James, you did some really good internal work with the team around what COVID has done to the payments landscape, not just now, but across the next few years in the form of a regnosis. And maybe if you could just recap that in a couple of minutes, because I found it super useful. And I think it's an interesting way to spark a debate around what the long-term impacts are on this.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you're right. We've come a long way since the last time we spoke. I mean, we're recording this from home. I mean, we would normally record this in the office. We'd be speaking face to face. Now we're doing it over Google Meet, which I think is the first thing to acknowledge. But when looking directly at the payment space, it's been an extreme ride these past few months. Obviously, I've partaken in a few online webinars discussing this topic and just discussing how the payments landscape and the fintech landscape has been impacted from the pandemic, and how it's actually rallied together and how it's just come from strength to strength. And I think that's the underlying story that I've always wanted to tell, is that payments is... If anything, this pandemic has accelerated most of our business models out there. At least any business that's thinking of a digital first approach, thinking of digital currencies, e-commerce, etc. It's really lit a fire underneath a lot of these businesses and caused these businesses to excel and really put an e-commerce first approach into anything. Into everything that they're doing, excuse me. So, I mean, if you look at the US, is a credit card or card dominated economy. They're starting to move into contactless. I mean, contactless is definitely one of the big trends going on in that part of the world at the moment. There's a story I read earlier on this week about Venmo now introducing contactless pay, and we can maybe go into that a little bit later on. What that means for the economy. In Europe, Europe's always been a pro e-commerce region, and it's been a high percentage of the population's always been partaking in e-commerce. But because of the pandemic over the past few months, that has just accelerated it. We're seeing new demographics and new age groups coming online. We're seeing businesses that never had an e-commerce approach quickly get up and running and repurpose their businesses so they could sell online. We're seeing platforms stepping to the plate. Companies like Shopify, just look at their share price over the last few months, and you can see what that's done for their business. And it's a trend that we've always known has been coming. It's something that we at PPRO have built our business off the back of. We think we think economies are going digital, transactions are all going to be digital. Even if they're in-store transactions, they'll have an e-commerce element to it, or they'll go across e-commerce rails. And it's just been an acceleration of that over the past few months, because we've been forced to transact online, and those that have never performed e-commerce transactions have been forced to take that first step. And as soon as you make that first step and you realize the convenience of digital payments and shopping online, it's very hard to go back to what was our old way of life. So the saying of things will never be the same and we'll be moving into a new normal is entirely correct, I think, in our personal lives as well as in payments and fintech, because the new normal is an accelerated version of, I think, what was already happening.
Yeah. And I think that the key thing I notice and pick up from what you're saying there is the acceleration. For me, it feels like we are taking a leap in almost every market 5 years forward in the space of about 5 months, because we were forced to. So you mentioned about the contactless and how that's suddenly grown in the States. It was always a thing in the UK, but the older people I know, relatives and friends, were somewhat reticent to do contactless. But with the threat of COVID, all of a sudden it's the only way they want to pay. My father-in-law is a bus driver, and he used to refer to contactless payments as hit and run, because he always thought that you could tap and run off before the transaction went through, which is maybe somewhat naive, but a quite funny way of thinking about it. Yeah. What's been interesting for me is the way businesses have had to adapt and how successful some of those have been, and how it took some others a little bit of time, with good reason. So I live quite remotely, and a number of pubs and restaurants around me almost overnight spun up either home delivery, so they would cook food and freeze it and for you to cook at home, or they would start offering takeaways in the way that they didn't before. And that sort of, it's at a very micro level, but that's things that keeps the economy going. And those payments were all done over e-commerce rails. Obviously, they weren't wanting to take physical payments, and certainly at the start, they didn't want to see you to take a card transaction. So it's been really interesting the way they've done that. What always sticks out for me is a company like Primark, who have taken the decision not to go digital at all. They do not want to go on e-commerce, even in this market. And the amount of revenue they lost in the first three months after COVID was staggering, but they've still taken the decision that they are not going to go online, almost a sole bastion in that way. And it would be interesting to see how long they can stick to that strategy as the length of time that people are staying away from physical stores increases.
My opinion on that is Primark's a huge business. They're not going to go underwater anytime soon. But long term, taking a decision like that, I would brand them as one of the next blockbusters that'll just disappear over time, because people want optionality. Even if they don't have an e-commerce offering, they want click and collect. They want these mm-hmm. different forms. They want to buy clothes online, try them on at home, and send them back. They want to use these Klarna payment methods to do invoice payments, etc. So it's definitely here to stay, and it's quite interesting the examples of new business models popping up. I mean, you mentioned your pub and your local cafe around the store. I've seen the same thing here around the corner from me, in that they were very quick to adapt, very quick to put these new business models up and running. I saw a lot of cafes all of a sudden turning into mini supermarkets. I saw a lot of that type of work, but what I find even more fascinating, and this goes back to the payments landscape, is some of the restaurants and some of the pubs, how they've reacted to change the way that they accept payments long term. And actually, in a webinar I did a few weeks ago, I mentioned Young's Pub. So Young's Pub is a pub chain in the UK. Actually don't know how many pubs they have. They've got, I don't know, 50, 60.
A lot, pubs. Yeah.
They've got a lot. They've got a lot of pubs. They've always had a Young's Pub app, and they've had it for some time now. I mean, I've had it on my phone for at least a year, but I only had it on my phone because I was interested in payments. And through the app, you could pre-order drinks at your table. You could check into the various pubs. You could open a tab, etc. And they've always, so they had the basic infrastructure for what pubs will have by default now. So now that they're beginning to open, they are light years ahead of all of the other restaurants and pubs and bars out there, because they've already got the app. It's become default that most consumers who go into those pubs just whip out their phone, and they're not even using Apple Pay and those contactless payment methods. They're going straight to a pub branded e-wallet, which is, I mean, it's insane to think that that's going to become the norm now, because a year or two ago, you know, you just wouldn't think that you would be using contactless. A lot of people were still using cash. Now you walk into a pub, you check in, you sit at your table, you choose what you want to drink, what you want to eat, plug it into your app, they deliver it to your table. And when you're done, you check out, you pay, and you just leave the table. It's an amazing experience. It's really good. I haven't tried it myself since the pubs reopened, but I did try it before the pandemic, and it was a great user experience. I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah, and very interesting that we keep coming back to the user experience. And I think that's something that people have recognized for a long time. By offering the right payment methods, you incentivize shoppers to use your service. But now it's much broader than that. It's offering the right consumer experience from start to finish, as you enter a premises or enter a website to when someone leaves. And again, that whole idea of a store for one, that highly personalized journey,
yeah,
that consumers want to go on and feel like that they're being sold to as an individual rather than within a channel, I think is going to become more and more important. And I think we'll continue to see disruption in the market like this.
For sure. I couldn't agree more. I mean, now that consumers are getting used to these different experiences, not that they weren't in the past, we were slowly adapting to it. Now we're being forced to use these new experiences. The new developments that'll be built on top of these apps, I think are going to make our lives really easy and really seamless from a financial, from a payment standpoint. It's really only the beginning now.
And I think if the world economies are going to limit the damage caused by COVID, it's going to be done online. I think that's everyone needs to just be aware of that, I think, from a merchant point of view. I think we're going to end up having a COVID section, yeah, every time we speak. So maybe let's draw a line under that there for this week. we want to use this time to discuss payments news. And I think we would be reticent not to talk about Wirecard. It certainly dominates a lot of my reading about the industry at the moment. We are, what, 3, 4, 5 weeks now since the story first broke. Actually, that's not completely true. The story first broke in this guise. I know the Financial Times and a number of other places had been discussing this for a considerable number of years and trying to report and investigate irregularities. What's your view, James? Have you seen any impacts? What's your early view on the impact this might have on the industry?
Yeah. So firstly, from PPRO's viewpoint, we haven't seen any negative impact. We didn't do business with Wirecard. So from that front, I think we've been fine. But from the industry as a whole, it's a tricky one. Obviously, a lot of our partners are picking up a lot of the business. I think there's been some fantastic stories out there around how certain partners certain PSPs and merchants really bonded over the fall of Wirecard and put together new solutions very quickly. The story that immediately comes to head is the story of Curve, Wirecard, and Checkout.com. So Curve were partnered with Wirecard for a lot of their services. As soon as it was reported that there was fraud at Wirecard, obviously Curve were in a lot of trouble. They quickly needed new providers in order to offer their services, and they turned to checkout.com. And they managed to get the majority of the integration, the contracting, the funds flow. They got the basic pieces of their partnership up and running in over a weekend, which is unheard of. It's an amazing story. And I think there's a lot of other examples of that we've seen around the ecosystem. So from that standpoint, it's been positive, because it shows we can quickly put solutions together. We can quickly look after each other, even though we're all, it's a frenemies to a degree. at the end of the day, everybody wants the consumer to be looked after. And that was done in this case. I think the downside of this is maybe some of the trust that fintech as a whole might lose from the fall or the demise of Wirecard. Obviously, it was partly or mainly Wirecard's fault, but partly the lack of oversight and regulation that they received from BaFin, or the regional regulator that was tasked to regulate Wirecard, and it was a failing on that front. And that's gonna I think put a bit of pressure on us coming forward, because all of the other regulators are now going to be on our backs ensuring that this doesn't happen. So it's a good thing for the industry as a whole. It just means all eyes are going to be on fintech for the next few months or years, just to ensure that this never happens again, because it was a explosion that the industry has never seen before.
For sure. I think for me, it's Wirecard were a relatively large company in terms of the scale and number of employees, and obviously our sympathy goes out to most of those who would have had little or no involvement in anything dishonest, and you know, they're always the guys that get hurt when something dishonest is happening. There's a lot of innocent people that are going to be looking for jobs and worrying about their money, as well as some businesses that might not survive the impact of some people's dishonesty. For me, there's a number of dishonest things that had been going on within Wirecard, but then there's also the audit side of it, that EY were signing off their accounts for 5 years, and audit as a whole, as an industry, has come under a lot of scrutiny recently. Patisserie Valerie in the UK springs to mind, 18 months ago. And so you've got the dishonesty element, and then you've got the people asleep at the wheel element. And I think as a whole, the industry needs to make sure that we're doing things properly and not being dishonest. The thing I really liked about Curve, which you mentioned, was they almost wrote the book on how to deal with it from a PR perspective. So the FCA basically shut them down. Consumers' funds were trapped because the FCA mandated that anything going through Wirecard's UK entity, which coincidentally has been seen to be completely separate and I think was previously a Northern Building Society. But the FCA is a precautionary measure, mandated that it all gets shut down, stop. Curve did an amazing job of informing their consumers, not just at the time, but at almost hourly intervals. There's a stream page on their website where they give an update of what they're doing, what they're doing next, what the blockers might be. And it's the sort of thing that if something went wrong at PPRO, we would spin up internally. But as a way to manage the end consumer, I just thought it was fantastic. And again, we come back to the consumer. It's the theme of this show, that the consumer is the most important thing there.
I think I agree with you. I think the communication part is very important. And I've seen this throughout the payments in the fintech landscape. You have some companies that handle the communication extremely well. And I think that's where we need to move towards, especially when it comes to transparency and trust. So something like this, we've as a whole, the industry, we've lost a little bit of trust. Everybody needs to effectively step up to the plate and become more transparent about how they're working, how they proactively are trying to prevent incidents like this, how they're building technology to give consumers and also maybe give regulators more transparency. We're seeing this from time to time with outages or technical outages from a lot of providers. So like Cloudflare went down the other day, and they gave a detailed minute-by-minute brief on how their services went down, what happened, and how they rebuilt their services and effectively put a part of the internet back together. And I think we need to start seeing that for other parts of the business. Now, it's a little bit tricky when it comes to sensitive information and maybe the more regulated parts of these businesses. But I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing that trend of transparency starting to filter throughout the rest of these payments businesses.
Yeah, I think I spoke about this on either a webinar or a written piece, that big banks and incumbents seem to have it harder, and I think it's because there's an expectation that they don't fail, right? They've been going for over 100 years in many cases, and consumers have an expectation that they don't go down, they can manage these things correctly. And I think smaller fintechs, you know, like a Monzo, a Revolut, a Starling, perhaps because they're seen as more agile and internet first, and the internet does go down, consumers don't necessarily expect the same level of them. And it will be interesting to see in 10 years when these banks are bigger, whether the consumer expectation of them has changed and whether they can solve some of these issues.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah. The last bit about Wirecard, which just astounds me, is that the COO who seems to be carrying a can for, certainly the investigators want to talk to him quite quickly, is being housed in Russia by all accounts, having got there through forgery of flight documents and flight manifests. It's staggering that it almost doesn't feel real, but I'm sure one day we're going to see a film about this.
I was about to say, I'm sure somebody's writing a script at the moment, and Hollywood or someone will get hold of it.
Fantastic. Let's jump into some more positive news. So checkout.com, who we mentioned as part of the Wirecard story in a very positive way, I should point out, and their recent raise.
Yes. I mean, they've done extremely well recently. They've recently raised 150 million, which values them at now 5.5 billion. So as a company, they've been profitable since 2012. So they have been profitable for quite a while. However, only recently have gone out to the markets and begun external fundraising. And we've seen this, or we've seen them raise quite a few times over the past few years. And I think that's a good sign. It's good directionally for the industry as a whole, seeing that they're still raising these large sums throughout a pandemic. I mean, outside of checkout.com, we're still seeing large fundraising rounds go through. We're still seeing acquisitions going through. And it shows the resilience of the industry that we're working in, that although global markets might downturn at some stage, I mean, stock markets are going up for some reason that I can't fully wrap my head around. we're seeing technology, or we're seeing a lot of money pour in technology in public and private markets. And checkout.com is the latest winner in this regard. So I would expect to see a lot of movement from them. I'd expect to see a lot of growth from them. Not that we haven't seen that before. But it's good news for them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think interesting that you pick up it, tech stocks seems to be one that are rising. And do you think of Checkout as a tech company, or do you think of them as a payments company, or you know, an e-commerce enabler or a platform? It's really interesting. And I think maybe whittling down from just technology and looking at platforms, I think you see platforms making a significant headway in terms of investment pounds and dollars.
No, that's for sure. I mean, certainly in Q2 alone, I mean, I mentioned other fundraising rounds. There was, Stripe raised $850 million US dollars. Robinhood, which is another fintech out of the US, $430 million. Fundbox, $200 million. Another payments company out of Australia, Airwallex, $160 million US dollars. So again, I mean, I can go. I've got the list here. It goes again and again and again. There's just so many of them, and a lot of them fall into the same category. And I think we're going to see a lot of growth, continued growth from the sector for a while.
Definitely. One's keep an eye on, and maybe we can make it a weekly feature that we look at the investments and what's been going on in terms of our industry for that aspect of it. So from platforms to another platform, and maybe the story around Brazil suspending WhatsApp Pay after only a week, and then the update that as of 10:30 this morning they are allowed to process again. If you read into this, what's your take on what's happening in that market?
To, Yeah, I mean, you've actually taken me by surprise here, because I was going to speak about the suspension, and obviously the Brazilian regulator suspending WhatsApp Pay after a week. Obviously, they founded that decision on the fact that they wanted to preserve a competitive environment within Brazil. I think in Latin America, it is a very insular financial environment. It's very closed at this point in time still. So I think they are very protective of new competitors coming into the landscape, and they want local businesses to thrive, which is maybe why the Brazil Central Bank took that decision. Since then, obviously, they've had a lot of discussions and a lot of talks that have obviously caused them to reverse their decision, which is great. I mean, obviously, I think I need to give a bit of reading. So if you give me a minute or two, I'll catch up to you on this one.
Yeah, no. So I think the only other insight I've got is that they used the time. So I think they were suspended in June, and yes, the Brazilian Central Bank has said that they've been evaluating the risk around it. So yeah, no further insight other than really a pretty sparse press release from the Brazilian Central Bank saying that it will authorize the payment system involving WhatsApp messaging services and to send money and make payments. They say that all rules must be respected, so it makes you wonder what rules weren't respected. And for me, it speaks to probably the regulator not moving as fast as they should in that market. So in June 2020, they withdrew the authorization for the payment service, and probably it feels like that in a very challenged economy, they got concerns about how fast this was being adopted and what the impact on the wider economy may be, and they wanted to take the time to really understand what the risks were around that and whether there's any issues.
And also the other potential risk there is the risk of a different payment provider coming into the market that maybe utilizes a different technology, maybe utilizes a cryptocurrency, and maybe that gains traction. And if that were to happen, obviously the Brazilian Central Bank would have even less control over it. So you probably find it was there were a lot of discussions going on behind the scenes that caused the regulator to have a lot of faith in WhatsApp or Facebook, and maybe they have some kind of oversight into the technology that they're using. Obviously, they have oversight as a regulator, but enough to give them comfort to relaunch the service or to expand their oversight to the business.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting. In emerging markets, generally tend to adopt new models, new businesses more quickly than maybe some of the larger developed economies. Interesting, they put the brakes on that one.
Well, Matt, thanks for the discussion today. I think our time's coming to an end, at least for the quick news wrap-up today. For the listeners out there, it's good to be back on air. Matt and myself, we will continue to upload more often now. So in the future, you'll hear more from us on news updates. From time to time, you'll hear guest interviews. We've got some internal speakers that will line up for the show, as well as potentially some external partners will be joining the show, industry specialists, guest speakers from time to time. So this is the Keeper of Payments Radio. Thanks for listening in, and we'll speak to you next time. If you like this episode, subscribe and don't forget to leave us a great review. It helps other people find the show. And if you know someone who loves payments, pass the podcast on to them. You can find us at ppro.com. That's ppro.com. Or email us at paymentsradio@ppro.com.